This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Reed Wallach of Sports Illustrated, our buddy, will join us. We will go over some of these college football bowl games, maybe touch on the quarterfinal games here a little bit. Haven't spent much time on the bowl games. Couple reasons. I mean, first of all, it's hard, you know, days out, weeks out to get involved with these games because there's so many, you know, transfers and opt-outs and all that kind of thing. We're sitting here a week or two ahead of time. It's very hard to preview these, but got a lot of games Friday, a lot of games Saturday. Take a break Sunday, then we get more Monday here. This is bowl week, so we'll get at least a thought or two on each of these bowl games from Reed, who does a good job staying on top of the opt-outs and all that thing. So we'll talk to Reed coming up. Excited for that. And I'll get to my picks for the NFL, and I got a couple bowl picks that I'll get to, but I'll just start quick recap of the Christmas games once again, similar to last weekend where you go into the college football first round and you're excited and games around the clock and you're just completely disappointed. The games were a bore. Boy, these games on Christmas were an absolute bore. Chiefs-Steelers was a waste of time. The Steelers magic has run out. Now, the Steelers might get a break, and we'll get to the Texans here in a minute because the Steelers are not going to win the division. The Ravens are going to beat the Browns at home in Week 18, and the Steelers, after leading this division pretty much wire to wire from Week 1 to Week 17, are no longer leading it. It is going to be the Ravens that are going to win this division, but the Steelers are going to get a reprieve and play Houston in round one. It looks like that is pretty much set. Steelers are going to be the 5, Texans are going to be the 4. So two teams that you really wouldn't pick against anybody else, pretty much, maybe Denver, maybe the Chargers, depending on the venue. Two teams really limping into the playoffs, two teams that have played terribly, are going to square up. And I would think the winner plays the Chiefs, because if it just plays out like we think, Bills will be the 2, Ravens will be the 3, and that will be a division round matchup, assuming both teams win. And boy, what a division matchup that would be, because you're going to have all of the Lamar versus Allen MVP revisited. We won't even know who won MVP at that time. So whoever loses, you're going to be, that guy obviously didn't deserve MVP. So there's going to be a lot of revisionist history in terms of that, but getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But we are probably looking at an AFC division round of Chiefs versus the winner of Steelers Texans, and then Bills versus Ravens. So that's a hell of an AFC semifinal if that's what it ends up being. But Steelers, the magic has worn off. I actually wondered if they would think about going back to Fields just to spark the offense. The defense hasn't played well. The offense has given them nothing. They've lost 3 in a row. They've gotten blown out in all 3. Eagles beat them by 17. The game last week against the Ravens wasn't very competitive, or that one landed on 17. And this week they get blown out, and I think this landed 29-10. They lose by 19. So they haven't scored. They haven't played good defense. And a couple things about this game. Tomlin continues to just continue with these just give up completely inexplicable punts when you're down 19, 6 minutes left. Okay, you're probably not going to win the game, but usually teams just pretend to go for it. This is 3 weeks in a row where he's punted in the fourth quarter of these games, where he's basically just quitting on the game, basically just giving up. So any idea of him being coach of the year, you can forget it. That team, unless the only reason they have a chance to win a playoff game is because they're playing the Texans. If they ever drew the Ravens or one of these other teams, they would get throttled. So I don't know where that leaves you with Tomlin, the Steelers, and all of this, because they get so much love, so much credit for winning season. They never do anything. They are never a contender. They never do anything in the playoffs. They're never a real threat. This idea that, hey, they're a threat to go to the Super Bowl, nonsense. That's out the window. So again, they got a chance to go to the second round, and who knows? Once you get past that, it's house money, because they could beat the Texans. Be fascinating to know what that line is, Texans-Steelers, because, like I said, they both played so badly, and that was an embarrassing performance by the Texans on Christmas. Maybe Texans by a point, Steelers by a point. I don't know. Who's the better team? You got to give Texans something for home field, but that will be I'm sure that will be the early Saturday afternoon playoff game, that first one, which is always like the lowest-rated game. The least desirable matchup is always that Saturday afternoon on NBC. Bill Simmons always calls it the Shakey's game. That will be the Shakey's game. And the Texans are usually involved in it, so they will stay on brand. I'm sure that will be the early Saturday afternoon game here in a couple weeks when the playoffs do start. But the Netflix, we had no issues with the Netflix. I thought they would clean it up after the Tyson-Paul fight. I thought they would have, you know, all the glitching. There's enough money in that company. They're smart enough to know, hey, we can't have that again. Now, the broadcast, our buddy Ian Eagle was outstanding, as he always is. He could not get a word in edgewise, because Nate Burleson, he's doing the game with Nate Burleson, and Watt was fine. Nate Burleson would not shut up. Oh my goodness. I couldn't finish a call, finish a sentence, anything without Burleson jumping in every time. I mean, oh, he's opening the end zone. Oh, he's just, I think he thinks he gets paid by the word, or he has to constantly talk. He would not shut up. He was awful, awful on the game, trying to be funny and just constantly talking. I thought he was terrible. The one after with Noah Eagle and Olsen was really good. Noah's really good, and Olsen's outstanding too. They're both, you know, A+. So that one was much better. But man, Burleson really, and once you noticed it, it was hard not to notice it because he just would not stop talking. But and the other thing too, does Netflix really need 12 people to cover a football game? I mean, you had the three people in the booth. You had two sideline reporters. You went to halftime, and it was, and this is another train wreck there, halftime. Manti Te'o, RG3, who's a clown. Mina Kimes, who's pretty good. I think she's very knowledgeable. She does a good job. The host, Kay Adams, that's four people. Then they had another halftime panel with the McCourty twins, and I think it was Laura Rutledge. I mean, you got up to like 12 people for one game. I mean, what do we do? Is the idea to just basically waste $1 million on, you know, 10 different people and do a job with 12 people that you could do with, like, I don't know, five? You just need two people in the booth. You need a couple people during halftime, maybe one silent, but you do it with four or five people. This idea that you need 12 people to cover a game is just completely, it is such overkill. It's ridiculous, but no issues in terms of the picture, the glitching, it went off smoothly. But again, the games were just terrible, including Baltimore, Houston. I don't know what you do with Stroud. I mean, I guess you say, hey, he was great year one, year two, sophomore slump, and we go into year three and we think we still have a quarterback, but he was so bad on Christmas. I almost hope he's hurt dealing with injury. He was so inaccurate, like not even like throws down the field, little screen passes where he's so wild. I don't know if it's a mechanical issue. I don't know if it's an injury issue, but man, usually, and they were down 31-2, which in some ways is more embarrassing for some reason than being down 31-0. I can't explain why, but I just think it is. That game's 31-2. Usually you see this all the time in the NFL. The team that's losing gets a bunch of garbage time, you know, yardage points. You get in the end zone a time or two, and you make the score look respectable, and the defense softens up, and you move the ball. There was none of that. They couldn't even cross midfield. So Houston was just embarrassed, absolutely start to finish. They got the safety, but that was it, and the game was you know, it was over at halftime, and now that brings into the conversation Allen, Lamar, and MVP. Odds are saying Allen's still a slight favorite, which I think is right. I think that Allen will still win, but you could make certainly a good case for Lamar, but I think it's close enough where Allen hasn't won, and Lamar's won twice, and then Lamar's followed up by being bad in the playoffs. I think that will be held against them, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Lamar won again, would be his third in, you know, 6 years, in 6-7 years. He's only been a starter since 2019. He's only been in the league since 2018. And Allen's never won, and this would be back-to-back for Lamar. So something to keep an eye on that looked over coming into the weekend. But the standalone game, the outstanding performance for Lamar Jackson brings him back into the mix. The idea that Barkley could ever win is completely ridiculous. He's never going to win. And we probably got to remember this for next year and the year after. Every year we get a McCaffrey or a Barkley. Oh, could running back win MVP? The answer is always no. Adrian Peterson was a long time ago. I don't want to say it's never going to happen again, but we do this every year where we try to make a case for a running back, and it's kind of dead money. These guys are just not going to win. It's the best quarterback award. It's been that for a while. So keep that in mind for next year. But we'll get to Reed Walk here in a minute. Chiefs get the one. Steelers Texans set up in the 4-5. So the playoff picture, I don't know that we're going to go into week 18 with a ton of drama. The one thing to keep an eye on, at least in the NFC, obviously the NFC West, and we're taping this as right before Bears, Seahawks, the one seed, because Minnesota, and I'll get to that game in a minute, Minnesota two wins away from being the one, and they are now like a 1-point underdog in a lot of spots against Green Bay, which I don't understand because they were 2-point favorites on the look ahead. Why is this line moved 3 points? Minnesota's healthy. Okay, Green Bay beat up on the Saints. We expected them to beat up on the Saints. That wasn't a surprise. I think this line is a little bit disrespectful to Minnesota. This line is saying Green Bay is better than Minnesota. And I'll get to now. I'll take Minnesota, call it a pick 'em. It's +1 some spots. It's pick 'em in some spots. I think Minnesota wins the game. I think they're home, which is a valuable home field advantage. And they're much more motivated. They're still playing for a division and the all-important one seed. Green Bay is locked into a wild card. I know they want to make a statement and say, hey, we can beat one of these better teams, which they haven't really done. They've lost both to Detroit. They lost to Philly. They lost to Minnesota. So maybe they're due to kind of break through and win one of these games. But I'm going to go with Minnesota here in the home field advantage. So I'll take Minnesota to pick them. The other couple I like real quick, I think you see this a lot, week 17, week 18. Motivation becomes a big tax. There becomes a huge tax on motivation. And I'll just take them both at once here. The Bucks laying 8 to Carolina. The Bucks should win and they should be favored. They're rightfully favored. -8, though. Carolina's played pretty well outside the Dallas game a couple weeks ago. They played in Carolina a few weeks ago, these two teams, and it was an overtime game, and Carolina should have won. They fumbled when they were in field goal range in overtime when they were about to kick a game-winning field goal, and Hubbard fumbled. So I'll take Carolina +8, and same sort of thinking. Arizona getting 6.5. It's up to 7 in some spots against the Rams. If you told me these two teams played on a neutral field, okay, the Rams have played better lately. Arizona hasn't played well. But like a week or two, this game would have been maybe a pick 'em on a neutral field. Okay, maybe the Rams by a point. Maybe give the Rams like a point or so for home field. How you get to 6.5 here makes no sense to me. You're just completely building in, taxing in the motivation angle of, hey, the Rams playing to try to win a division. Arizona's been eliminated. So let's just juice up the line. And look, if you've noticed, the favorites in the bowl games, the college football playoffs, the NFL games on – you know, last weekend, the Christmas games, the favorites have just won and covered and covered. So they're taxing you and saying, hey, no more of this. We got to balance out our action. We got to make you think twice before taking these favorites. So that's why I like Arizona and I like Carolina +8, Arizona +6.5, Minnesota pick 'em or the 3 NFL. And just quickly in college, I like under 51.5 Georgia Tech Vandy. Just don't think Vandy's good at throwing the ball, and Georgia Tech's pretty good defensively. I just think this is like a grinded out type of, surprised it's 51.5. I think it's like a 23-20 type of game. Ugly, low scoring, close. We'll lean towards Vandy if you can get the 3. I'm a little surprised Vandy's getting 3 as well, but I'll go with the under of that one. And UNC laying 2.5 to UConn. Just living in Connecticut, look, I follow UConn somewhat, and just in terms of like the players they get are not as good as the players an ACC school like UNC gets. I think the fact that Belichick's there is a little renewed enthusiasm for the program. They haven't gotten completely killed with opt-outs. I know the big-time running back and some guys on defense have opted out. For the most part, they're pretty much intact, but UConn's dealing with some opt-outs themselves. So I just think UNC, this game is in Fenway. Our buddy Lombardi and Belichick, I'm sure, will be at the game. In Fenway, taking on UConn. That's a Saturday afternoon game. I'll go UNC to lay the 2.5 here, and I'll take UNC. So 5 picks for you. We'll see what Reed Wallach thinks. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast, and he is back. You can catch him at Sports Illustrated, the Early Reed podcast. It is Reed Wallach. Reed, I think you and I were just going over last time you were on. I think it was 1-1 Mets Dodgers. We were trying to will home a Subway Series. That didn't happen. But what's going on, man? How's it going?
Everything's good. Since I've come on, though, we might AL's still pretty open, but we might be a little bit closer to the Subway Series now that the Mets got Soto. But everything's good, man. Busy time of year, college football playoff, bowl season, a lot of bets to be had. It's a pretty chaotic type of year or kind time of year. But it's all good, man. Happy to be back on.
You need some pitching. I know the Soto move is great, and I guess you bring back Alonso, and you did bring back Bania. But, man, this approach of like, we'll just kind of grab whoever at pitching and then we'll grab whoever for starters, and we'll kind of mold them and hope they hit lightning in a bottle. It worked last year, but I don't know. I'd expect them to be in on either Sasaki or Burns. You need kind of one ace because Senga's coming off an injury, and you need, I don't know, another big-time ace, I would say.
Yeah, I think one more pitcher and the team should be good, but I think we've seen, especially in Major League Baseball the last few years, got to be flexible at the deadline. Buyers, injuries happen to every team. Things develop over the season. So I don't think the Mets need to go into the season as a finished product as long as they give themselves some flexibility. But I totally agree with you. Definitely need another pitcher to compete with the Dodgers.
All right, let's get into some of these bowl games. We can go kind of rapid fire because we've got 5 on Friday and then 7 on Saturday, 8 on Saturday. We've got a bunch here the next couple days. I haven't done a ton on them just because, man, it's hard to do these and have them not age with all the opt-outs and stuff. So we'll get to the games. But before we get to them, the favorites have crushed, and these big line movements have gotten home. And some of these games where line moves from like 2 to 4 to 6 to 8, it doesn't matter. Like all the numbers cover. Do you make anything of this? Is this a thing?
I think that in bowl season, especially with the opt-outs, people who are early to and wise to some of the potential movements and market dynamics, you can get in way good. And typically, yes, it's always good to have the best number, but typically if you catch on to the steam and you're late, it's not a killer. So I think changing your opinion of how like, you don't want to be late to the steam, you don't want to like chase the steam, like you could kind of do that in bowl season. Obviously there's a threshold to that, but typically the moves are pretty good and they're pretty warranted. So I would say maybe that's part of the market dynamics that if you are a bettor and maybe you're new to bowl season, don't be afraid to catch steam. I know during the regular season, people like to be like, oh, this line's gone too far. With some of the opt-outs and the state of some of these teams, you sometimes can't like put a real number on the drop-off.
All right, let's get to it. Oklahoma laying 3 against Navy. This has been one of these big line movements where Oklahoma was laying a touchdown. I understand the sentiment for wanting to back Navy. They don't have any opt-outs. They are always up for bowl season. Maybe their opponent isn't. Has this number gone too far? Any thoughts? Oklahoma laying 3, total 43.
This is it's a good place to start considering I didn't bet the early Navy numbers at over a touchdown. Now we're at 3. It's a tough one because there is still an SEC jump for Navy to, hey, you're going to face some athletes, but there's a lot of guys out for this Oklahoma team. Stutzman, their top linebacker in Oklahoma, is out. A lot of defensive players are going to be out. It's just tough to get a gauge. This one's probably a pass for me. I know that kind of sucks. First game, going to give it a pass. It's just you're paying such a premium to get the dog here, where even with the opt-outs, there's still a pretty big talent difference between Navy and Oklahoma. Service Academy is usually a good bet during bowl season because it's tough prep. No, who cares about prepping for a triple option when it's an exhibition game? But man, 3, it's going to be tough for me to get to the window on Navy. So probably a pass for me.
Georgia Tech laying 3 to Vandy, total 51. I lean towards Vandy. I like the under quite a bit here. I'm surprised it's as high as 51 as a 51 and a half here. I just think this is a close, grimy game. That favors Vandy. I don't know how good Vandy is at throwing. Georgia Tech, good defensive line. Do you have a play here?
I like the under as well. 51 or better, to me, under is the move here. Both teams want to run the ball slow, methodical. Georgia Tech, their best receiver, Eric Singleton, he's off to Auburn. Malik Rutherford, their number two receiver, entered the portal, said he's going to play in this game. We'll see that. Always a little weird when the guy's in the portal and he says he's going to play. Does he play a little bit? Does he want to get to a certain number or something? Something to keep an eye on. But I like the under here. I would lean towards Vandy on the side. Again, two teams that want to play slow, and typically Georgia Tech is a fade as a favorite, play as an underdog. The way Georgia Tech likes to play, they don't typically profile as a good favorite, so would lean me towards dog and under. Should be a really good game. Both teams should be pretty motivated. It's been a great year for both clubs, so should be like one of those bowl games where you get a pretty good effort, real trying from both teams, which is not always a given in bowl season, but I like the under here at 51 or better.
Texas Tech, Arkansas. Arkansas laying a point. Arkansas is missing a ton of guys here. You have anything here? Total 51 and a half.
Yeah, I played some early Tech. It's kind of bounced back and forth between like within a field goal on both sides. I still like Tech even at a pick 'em. There's opt-outs on both sides. I would wait. If you're listening to this, maybe it's announced already, but Taj Brooks, the star running back for Texas Tech, as of now, he's playing. We'll see what happens leading up to kickoff. So keep an eye on that. But for Arkansas, you have two or three starting offensive linemen. You have their top three pass catchers. You have their backup running back in the portal. It's pretty much just Talen Green. And for the Tech side, Brennan Morton, their starting quarterback, he's going to be out with a shoulder injury. But they have this freshman, Hillebrand. He played a half against TCU. Now he gets the full prep. Joey McGuire, 2-0 in bowl games as a coach. So typically who I like. And I just think look, it's a coin flip game. It's pretty volatile outcomes, but I think you're going to get a better effort out of Tech, even with their starting quarterback out. For Arkansas, this could be like a total wash. Like they could have nobody left. Like if Green gets hit a few times, does he want to keep playing? Like this to me looks like I'd rather go to war with Tech at a pick'em than Arkansas. I don't really know why Arkansas is favored to begin with. So I like Tech in this one, even at a pick'em. I think they win this game.
Syracuse laying now 17 against Washington State. I wouldn't be surprised by the time people listen to this if it you know, which is only hours from now, if it's even higher, because I just don't see the sentiment for betting Washington State other than just grabbing a number. They're missing their coaches, they're missing all their players, their quarterback. Is this too many points? Syracuse laying 17 total, 59 and a half.
This is one of those numbers that it could keep steaming, and there's no, and like you don't know how far this could really go. Tough for me to say lay 17 and a half in a bowl game. It's tough, and I won't say lay it, but I think that there are some interesting ways to play this live betting where you really see Washington. Like to me, bowls live betting is a strategy if you really see, hey, this team is just not up to par like just keep going. Live bet, touchdown on this drive, punt on the other drive, things like that. Like, I think there's some good live betting strategies for this one. It's 8 o'clock on, 2 days after Christmas. I'm sure everybody's gonna be home chilling. Try and open up the accounts, and you can maybe find a good angle to bet here. For the Wazoo side, their defense is gonna be a disaster. We don't even know who their defensive coordinator is. The backup who's gonna be starting at quarterback for John Mateers off to Oklahoma, Eckhouse. Bryant transfer threw for like a bajillion yards in the FCS ranks, was competing with Mateer for the job in the preseason. Like, could he give something? Because Syracuse's defense isn't really a lockdown unit. So, like, right now, if I had to give you like a pregame side or total, like maybe it's over because Syracuse runs this up and Wazoo gets a few garbage scores in, or like Syracuse team total over. But for me, keep an eye on this live betting. Like, there could be like just no stop in sight here, and Syracuse could really light this one up.
The last one Friday night, the old Vegas Bowl, Texas A&M now laying 4. This opened around a pick 'em. Lincoln Riley was impressive last year against Louisville in the bowl game, and I think they were a big underdog and fell behind 7-0, and then they just kind of dominated the game from that point forward. So I'm not dying to lay the 4. This is a pretty easy pass for me. I guess A&M would win, but I don't want to lay it here. Do you have anything?
Again, a lot of opt-outs for mainly the USC side. Just going through their depth chart. Kyron Hudson out. He's off to Penn State. Deuce Robinson's off to FSU. Zachariah Branch. These are all wide receivers. He might be off to Georgia. Both starting running backs in the portal, starting offensive linemen in the portal. So there's a lot there. Texas A&M should be closer to full strength, but if I had to give a pick on this game, I kind of lean towards the over. Fast game in Vegas. Kind of a meaningless, like stupid game anyway. And we saw Lincoln Riley in the bowl game last year, like you were saying. Well, I think they hung 42 on Louisville with Miller Moss. So there's still some guys on USC. Jacoby Lane wanted to keep an eye on. Maiva, he's still trying to prove he could keep this job in the future. Maybe this game just gets loose on a fast track in a dome, Allegiant Stadium. So I like the over. Maybe it's USC team total over. USC coaching staff, defense is still there. A&M, they have a mobile quarterback in Marcel Reed, and USC did kind of struggle against mobile quarterbacks. So that's kind of where I see like maybe some bad tackling, some broken plays, aggressive play calling, stuff like that. Like, that's why it's a low total. Like, this game is being lined like it's a regular season game, and obviously it's not with all the opt outs. So I kind of lean towards loose and stupid rather than like, let's lock this one down and let's like get some real like hard hitting plays here. So I kind of lean towards the over.
Saturday games, Nebraska laying 4 to BC. I understand the Nebraska motivation, but O'Brien's a good coach. Looks like Raiola is staying for Nebraska. I know there were some whispers about that. I can't quite get to 4. I think 4 is a little high, so it'd be BC or nothing for me. How about you?
Tough one here. I kind of agree towards the points now that we're back over a field goal. Feels like a game where, like, under 3, I like the favorite. Over 3, I kind of like the dog. There's some opt-outs on both sides of the ball. I don't think too much, definitely more on the Nebraska side, but Nebraska also has the best player on the field in Dylan Raiola. Maybe they're onto something with Holgorsen. He now is the OC moving forward there. So, another few weeks of practice for Raiola. But ultimately, for me, this is probably a pass. Just a game I don't really have a strong feel for.
TCU laying 12 to Louisiana. I don't really have much interest in the game. Seems like a lot of points. Is TCU going to be motivated to lay this number against the Louisiana team? I don't know. Do you have anything here?
Yeah, I actually ended up with a lot on this game. I like Louisiana and I like the over.
Ooh.
Seems like Ben Wooldridge is going to be back for this one after he had a collarbone injury at the end of the regular season. TCU down their top two pass catchers in Beck, Betch, and Savion Williams. But still, Josh Hoover should be able to chuck it all over the yard. But TCU, not a team I love laying points with. Louisiana, their defense is pretty poor. So I think you could see this game be pretty open and loose. Over for me, I think Louisiana is honestly pretty live in this game. If you're getting Wooldridge back, guys played all year. He's a Sun Belt Offensive Player of the Year. I think you're going to want to see a full effort from him if he's coming back to play. So I think this game can be super competitive. I think some explosive plays on both sides of the ball. So over and dog for me in that one.
How about Miami, Iowa State here? Miami laying 3.5. This is Miami, Florida. We do have both Miami teams in action Saturday. Cam Ward, is he going to play? To me, that's what it comes down to. If he plays the whole game, this is probably cheap. If he plays like part of the game, I'd want the points. Haven't bet it. How about you?
Completely agree. This is all Cam Ward. This seems like a halfway number, kind of. He says he's going to play. So I guess let's go Miami. I like Miami. I also like the over in the game. Miami's defense is still an absolute sieve. I think Rocco Beck, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, that passing game should be able to cook. I think Miami, if Cam Ward's going to play the whole game, I think they should be able to take care of business. They just have a pretty huge skill advantage here. And I like the over. So, like, I think Miami should have little issue getting like five touchdowns here. Iowa State should be able to put up a pretty decent fight here. I think this could land somewhere like Miami mid to high 30s, Iowa State high 20s, like 38, 28, something like 20, 28, something like that.
Miami, Ohio laying 3 to Colorado State. I have no interest in this game. Miami, Ohio, I don't think their offense is good enough to be laying points here. So I would take Colorado State, but probably not going to bet it. Probably not going to watch it. You have a different opinion.
No, not really. It's just a game I don't have a lot of interest in. I kind of lean towards the dog, low total. Miami, Ohio, they have two wide receivers out, their top two wide receivers out, so like a little bit more shorthanded. So I guess Colorado State, but like not a lot of interest here.
Another one I have very little interest in, NC State laying 6 to East Carolina. Anything for you here?
I like the dog again.
Okay.
ECU, it's a team I can't seem to quit. I feel like I've bet them all year, and the middling results, definitely some infuriating results, that's for sure. But I don't really see that big of a gap between these teams. NC State, their top pass catcher, Kevin Concepcion, I believe he's rated the number one transfer wide receiver in the portal. So it's a pretty big loss for an NC State team that was, scraped to bowl eligibility. East Carolina, this is kind of like a little brother, big brother matchup. So I think ECU could be motivated here, and their high tempo offense could show something. So I like ECU. I think they can win this game for sure.
How about UNC laying 2.5 to UConn, total right around 53 or so? That total has come down a little bit. I actually like UNC. Just like I live in Connecticut. I know the kind of players they get. It's just not the same kind of players UNC gets. UNC, okay, they lose Hampton, the running back, and they got some guys on defense, but I just think UNC has better players than UConn. I think the Belichick thing looming over this probably helps Belichick. There's some enthusiasm around the program. What do you like in this game and just general thoughts? Do you think this is going to work, Belichick, to UNC? How's this going to look?
So, UNC was a team I was itching to fade in bowl season. Like when the games first came out, I thought we'd get UConn at a much bigger number. So, I was interested in UConn. But at under a field goal, I agree with you, Will, for some of the stuff you said. I like the heels at under a field goal. I know Omarion Hampton, their starting running back, going to the pros, is going to be a good pro at that. I can't really get to this number. I just think there's a pretty big talent gap here. UConn lost. Their four losses were all to power conference teams. So you've already seen them struggle against like pretty mediocre ones at that. So I think UNC, you should get a decent effort there. And as for the Belichick thing, you've seen guys come out of the portal, go back to UNC after they entered the portal. So you're already seeing some enthusiasm around the program. Is it going to work? I don't know. I think it definitely can. I think it's an interesting experiment, I would say. Look, the guy's a hell of a coach. I think. If I were to put my finger on it, seems like he didn't get the offers or the sentiment wasn't as strong for him to come back. And you're seeing college football with the money going in there, you can basically run an NFL style team and be okay. You don't have to recruit in high school necessarily. You could just kind of overhaul your roster each year if you have the resources. And it seems like UNC is giving him the resources. So yeah, I think it could work. We'll see. I'm curious who they're going to bring in at quarterback. Part of me wonders if a team still in the playoffs is going to lose their quarterback to UNC. That's kind of my conspiracy theory.
Would that
Tin
be yours?
Ewers back. I think that with the resources there, I wonder if Bill Belichick goes at big game hunting for one of the, what do you want to call them, like the undesirables all of a sudden in the NFL. I wonder if he goes out and gets a guy. I don't know anything about it. That's just kind of my thought, just given how this transfer portal cycle seems to be moving and the lack of quarterbacks. There's some high profile teams without a quarterback right now. So I'm interested to see if UNC enters the mix there.
And I'm curious, before we get to the last two games, have they any sense from you what they do for offensive coordinator? Because I think that's the big one where, hey, Belichick's always going to run his defense. You want an offensive coordinator to make that program, that system appealing. You any sense of where they're going to go for that?
No idea, but I think it would be pretty telling if they go out and bring in like McDaniels or Matt Patricia or whatever, Joe Judge, whatever you want, like whatever his fallen out coordinator, that turn coach stuff. If they go that route, like thumbs down for me. If they
I agree.
go exciting young, I think you could see something. Like to me, I don't know what the sentiment is around like Steve Belichick, his son, who I guess is like kind of the coach, head coach in waiting now. Washington, their defense was fine this year, and I think if you go out and get another young, exciting guy, you know what I mean? Like by like Steve Belichick is like this younger coordinator. If you go out and get a young offensive coordinator, all of a sudden you start to see this UNC, this outlook looks a little bit
I
rosier, in my
agree.
opinion.
Yeah, I think that's the key hire. Last couple games here on Saturday. BYU Colorado, fun because it's a conference game, which I don't remember happening
Yeah.
too much in bowl season. To me, Colorado laying four, to me, it comes down to like Hunter and Sanders. Are they playing the whole game? I think there's at least a decent chance one, if not both, don't play, but don't play the whole game, which would make BYU a bet for me at plus four. Do you have anything here?
Yeah, so again, this is like a similar to Cam Ward. Dion says that Hunter and Shadur are both playing. I like Colorado in the game. If you are concerned about like them playing the full game, first half, pretty cheap money line there. BYU, few opt-outs. Guys on the offensive line are going to be out for this one. Lassiter, their number two receiver, he is out for the first half after an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the season finale. I think Colorado, they're going to play. I think, based on what they're saying, Dion kind of has this team pretty fired up for this bowl game. I think Colorado's a better team. I think they should be able to win this one pretty easily against a BYU team that you just go through their schedule. Just not sure they have the firepower to keep up with a Colorado at full strength and kind of firing. As for why these two are playing, someone told me, I haven't fact-checked this, so sorry if I'm spreading more misinformation, but it passed the smell test to me. It's because it's two new members to the Big 12 that they were able to circumvent the typical conference rules of that they're in the same conference, they can't play each other. Because they're both new members, BYU their second year, Colorado their first year in the conference, it's kind of a little bit different circumstances for them. So that's why they're able to play in the Alamo Bowl.
Last one, Saturday night, Army laying a huge number, 16 and a half against La Tech, total 44. So that's interesting with such a high spread and such a low total. But figure Army motivated after a really bad performance against Navy, that they'll be focused here. These service academies are always focused, but you'll dying to lay 16 and a half here. I'm not. What's your take on this game?
It would probably be Army or nothing for me, to be honest with you. La Tech, they stand in for Marshall, who is, they opted out. La Tech's in. They were basically done for like 2 weeks. Now they're back and playing. Like, what's the type of, like, A, it's a tough team to practice for in Army with a service academy. Like, are you getting a full locked in effort from them? I don't know. Like, kind of close geography, I guess. So, like, that's why they're there. It would be Army or nothing for me. Don't have much interest. For what it's worth, Army's starting running back, Kanye Udoh, is off to Arizona State. So maybe you get a pop from somebody else. Obviously, Bryson Daly's there, their quarterback. He was came in, I think it was like fifth or sixth in the Heisman voting. Army probably smashed them, to be honest with you.
College football quarterfinals. We still got some time here, but do you have a favorite bet? And who's in the semis? We'll just cut to the chase here. Who are the four winners?
All right. So if I had a favorite bet right now at current, I like Oregon, Ohio State over 55. Honestly, you go back and look at the first meeting, both teams were chucking it around the yard in that game, 32-31 final. Both teams were hyper aggressive. There were only four tackles for loss. And I know that Ohio State, their offensive line is in worse shape, but I still think that they just have the skill position talent and the firepower to really move the ball at will. They average 5.6 yards per carry in that game. So I think there's going to be plenty of scoring opportunities. Should be a close game. If a three pop, then Oregon, I'd like Oregon as well. Another bet I kind of like, Penn State, Boise State, I got a bit higher, but I still like under 52 and a half. Both teams play super slow. Still not all the way sold on Penn State's offense, and I'm definitely not sold on this Boise State offense going against Penn State. I think you're really going to see Maddox Mattson struggle for the Broncos, their quarterback. So I like the under there. And then for who's going to play in the semis in the, I don't even know what the bowl games are in the semis, but on the left side of the bracket, when you look at it, I like Oregon versus Texas. And on the other side, I like Georgia versus Penn State. I think Georgia is going to take care of Notre Dame. I think they have a pretty sizable advantage in the trenches that they could shut down the Irish.
Yeah, and I think so. I would say chalk, but that's at least chalk by the seeding. But Ohio State's obviously the favorite on the field, which just illustrates how ridiculous it is. When we talked for a while, doing these different shows, I mean, you're sure you talked about it too, where the five is more desirable than the one, and it turned out the five is more desirable than the one because Texas, I know they have to play the extra game, but you look up, they're a two touchdown favorite.
Hey, I will say, not to cut you off, Will, I'm sorry about that, but I will say though, Texas, look, they played the games and it doesn't seem like they're that serious of injuries, but Wisner banged up in the game. Two offensive linemen banged up as well. And on the Notre Dame side, Riley Mills, and part of the reason why I like Georgia, they're starting defensive tackle Riley Mills, knee injury, out for the postseason. So I agree with you 100% that like they're, whether it's a reseeding or that the bracket needs to make more sense. Totally agree with you 100%. But I do think that there are obvious downsides to not having the bye, right? And you could also argue in my case for a team like Penn State, who got out pretty, came out of the game pretty healthy. Like, I have like these like dad things that like my dad will always say to me when we talk sports, like, oh, well, Penn State played, like they got the momentum. Like, you know, they're like Boise State, this isn't the best example because it's Boise State, but like Boise State, they were sitting on the couch for a week. Now Penn State, like they were playing, like they're fresh. They feel good. So I feel like you
Got a
could
game
kind
under their
of,
belt. Got a game.
yeah, you could kind of phrase it in different ways. I agree with you. Obviously, Ohio State and some of these other teams got hooked up by playing in the game, but some of them didn't get through scotch free with that. So there are like some upsides and downsides to both for sure.
Yeah, and I think the Texas Oregon game, that would be the Cotton Bowl, which is in Dallas. I mean that's a venue that favors Texas. So Texas really got the benefit of that. Oregon got a tough one, but look, we know Lanning, he can motivate, so I'm sure he's going to use this as, disrespect and all that stuff, and he can play that card. Who do you ultimately have winning?
I think it's not very fun, but I kind of like Oregon. Not like I'm like betting their future. I have no future stake anymore, which is kind of silly because I had Oregon in a bunch of like regular season related stuff, and I didn't take them to win the Natty, which I guess was kind of silly. But I do like Oregon, even with the tougher path. I still like them. You look at the other side. I think Georgia's being kind of slept on. Just I think that I don't know if the drop off from back to Stockton is all that much. If you want to follow me, I have some work just on Sports Illustrated where I do my betting notes, and I theorize that the Georgia offense with Beck was trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Beck, I think, is honestly probably better than people give him credit for it, but the Georgia pass catching group is really, really poor. You lose Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, you're gonna feel it. But I think they don't have a single pro on their in their pass catching group. So I think that this, with extra time and this new look offense, I think could kind of lean into Georgia's strengths a little bit more. And you see Georgia get back to kind of overpowering teams. So I kind of think Georgia being a little slept on, maybe not to win it all, but just to get maybe to the final or something like that. So that's kind of why, part of the reason why I like Georgia against Notre Dame. And obviously, it's kind of tough to trust Penn State in a big game like that.
Reed, you're the best man. A lot of football here the next couple of days. Enjoy it. Good luck with all your plays. I never know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Reed Wallach. All my stuff's there. Podcast, The Early Read. I do work for Sports Illustrated Betting, so you can check me out. And yeah, best of luck to everyone in bowl season, playoff. Will, thank you as always for having me on. Happy holidays, man.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thanks. We'll do it again soon. All right. Thank you to Reed Wallach. Enjoy the weekend. We will be back Monday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.